The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
All right, Sixers fans, welcome to a new episode of Sixers Daily. I'm your host, Jazz Kang, going to get into some salary cap talk involving Philly. How did the Montrezl Harrell deal impact the Sixers' bottom line? What are they going to be able to add possibly during the regular season? Plus, we'll talk some general NBA news as well. Robert Sarver, the owner of the Suns, is suspended. Going to give you the details on that and more. But before we jump into things, don't forget, subscribe to Liberty Ballers Podcast Network. You can catch us pretty much anywhere you get your fix, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, you name it, we are there. And of course, check us out at libertyballers.com. Joining me for this episode, a man who's behind some of the magic you see at Liberty Ballers, our resident salary cap expert, also a great NBA writer as well, Mr. Brian Toporek. Brian, first off, we are now in mid-September, basically a couple of weeks away from camp. How happy are you? We're finally going to talk about some stuff that's happening on the court.
I'm pretty excited, although I have a couple more things I want to get done before the offseason is over. So I need to get moving on that.
What do you need to get done?
I want to write about expansion and how that's going to impact CBA talks. Hoping to look at some best bets for the Sixers for the upcoming season as well. Those are the two ones that are front of mind, and I'm sure something else is going to come up in the next 2 weeks.
When you look at the expansion thing, now that you're mentioning that, what cities do you think would be at the top of the NBA's list to get a new franchise? And also, you know, they're at 30 teams right now. When you look at adding one or two more teams, depending on what Adam Silver and company want to do, because you look at the NHL, they rolled with 31 for quite some time. And, mm-hmm. you know, they had the imbalance in the conferences and with the NBA, it might be a similar thing. When you look at that, who's at the top of your list in terms of being able to potentially get a franchise?
Yeah, I mean, there was that AP writer a couple of weeks ago that said, you know, Seattle and Las Vegas, the mm-hmm. league is like reportedly planning on announcing the plans in the next couple of weeks. He's since deleted the tweet, so it might have been a premature report, but I think those are the two cities for obvious reasons. Seattle, like since the Supersonics left, people have been clamoring to get them a team back. They have a very passionate fan base. And mm-hmm. then Vegas, I think just every major sports league wants a cut. And now we've seen, you know, NHL and NFL in particular have now moved in there. And sports gambling has just, you know, become so much more prominent that I think a lot of the fears with Vegas originally were surrounding sports gambling, but now that it's just become so much more pervasive, the NBA wants a cut of having a team in Vegas as well.
It's funny how that happens though. Hey, Brian, like when you look at it, I remember, you know, obviously you look at the Pete Rose stuff, you know, growing up in the baseball realm of things, but it's like, then you had a, you know, Tim Donaghy in the NBA and all that. But you look at this and it's like, dude, yeah, as soon as this became legit, like I'm sure some states will pass it coming up in the midterms in November mm-hmm. in terms of allowing sports betting in their states. Obviously, places like Vegas, Jersey, Pennsylvania, you're able to make bets online. But when you're looking at when you're looking at the NBA right now, because I agree with you that Seattle should absolutely have a team. I grew up in Vancouver, Canada, you know, just down the road, the I-5 from Seattle. And then, you know, the Sean Kemp, Gary Payton, those squads obviously were great. And I think that those fans got robbed, considering mm-hmm. they would have had Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, and went on a definite run at that point, you know, in the mid-2000s. But looking at this from your perspective, because I've always looked at the league and thought to myself, they should, they wouldn't never do it because it's going to cost them money, but contract for the reason that you have so many crappy teams that it doesn't make it worth it. And if you look at, you know, the NBA layout, lay of the land, you know, if you had, let's just say you, again, these teams have some sort of history. So tough to say, hey, let's get rid of the Detroit Pistons or the Orlando Magic. But, you know, looking around some of these squads, like, let's be real, outside of Sacramento, nobody's going to care that the Kings are gone. You know what I mean? Nobody's going to care. But you put DeMontis Sabonis, you put De'Aaron Fox on these other teams that are coming up, that obviously makes them so much better, and it raises the league's floor. You get what I mean? Like, almost like to the point that, okay, you're not going to have these crummy teams filling out the bottom four or five slots. You're always going to have those, obviously, but it's not going to be the squads that are 17 win teams. So when you look at it, are you in favor of expansion, or would you oppose it?
Yeah, I'm pretty in favor. I mean, I think the league, for economic reasons, is very in favor. They're looking to recoup a lot of the money that they lost during the COVID times, and having two more franchises, all the owners are going to get a cut of the expansion fees. And then, you know, my guess is, I was thinking about this earlier today, like, the new TV deal is coming up in a couple of years. I'm guessing they want those teams online by then. So when they're negotiating those TV deals, they've got a 32 team league in place that they're talking about, not just a 30 team league. But I think a lot of the changes they've made in recent years between, you know, flattening the lottery odds, introducing the play-in tournament, I think it has incentivized more teams to actually try to win now and not go on these, like, multi-year rebuilds like the Sixers did and like what the Utah Jazz are about to embark on. Mm-hmm. So there really aren't, like, I, you know, my podcast co-host and I, Morten Jensen, we do league pass rankings every year. And I've been saying for months, like, this is going to be the hardest year we've ever done, because outside of like the Jazz and maybe the Spurs, like, I want to watch at least one player on every team. I think there's enough talent, not only throughout the league, but like for those who have been watching Eurobasket, you know, there's enough talent across the globe that you could very easily fill out, you know, two more teams, 30 players, and be fine. I don't think it's going to lead to this like massive dilution of talent that's going to hurt the league overall.
Yeah, you look at it. I mean, I mentioned the Pacers, who are likely going to stink, but I love Tyrese Halliburton. You know what I mean? Right. I could watch him play any night. You look at the Pistons with Cade Cunningham, Jaden Ivey. You know what I mean? You're going to be like, okay, I want to watch those guys. Orlando's got Paolo Banchero, and they have Franz Wagner. You know, these are the teams you might have looked at before and been like, ugh, you know, I don't, sorry, dude, I don't want to watch Terrence Ross jack up 63 pointers in a game. You know what I mean? But I think it'll be interesting, but I do think the league needs to find a way to keep that competitive balance. And you mentioned this when you were just talking right now, is the play-in tournament. I've always been kind of in and out on this. I know, strong take there, Jazz. I know that's what you're probably thinking, but I'll tell you why. Because to me, I don't think that 10th place team should get it. I think you should have maybe a tournament between, or you go, you know, 7, 8, 9 or something like that. Because what we've seen from the play-in tournament, yeah, we've had some memorable moments. Obviously, the Lakers-Warriors a couple of years ago, or last year in the 2021 play-in tournament, that was exciting to watch. And then you look at the rest of it, though, it's like most of these games turn out to be blowouts. So, you know, to me, it's like, well, what, I get it. It incentivizes teams to want to at least make an effort. Hey, maybe we can win a couple of games if you're the 10th seed. Get in, get your butt kicked by the number one seed, which brings in some extra playoff revenue for the owners and move things along. So are you a fan of the play-in tournament overall and this new tournament now that they're looking at the in-season thing? Like, where do you stand on this? And when do you think enough is enough?
Yeah, I mean, I like the play-in tournament, although I say that with the caveat that the Sixers haven't really been affected by it yet. Like, talk to me when they're in the 6-7 seed range, and we'll see if I feel as strongly about it. I do think I would like to see them implement what they had in the bubble, where there was like a cutoff in terms of how close you have to be eligible for it. Because like the Timberwolves, I think last year were like 10 games over, you know, the 9 and 10 seeds. And like, it would have really sucked if what happened to the Clippers, where, you know, Paul George gets hurt and like they just get knocked out, if that happened to the Timberwolves, and like despite having a way better regular season record than these 9 and 10 seeds, that they get knocked out because of a fluke injury, you know, in this small sample size tournament. So that is one thing I'd like to see change. But otherwise, I do like it. I do think it, however much you think tanking is a problem in the NBA, I do think it helps combat that. And then this in-season tournament proposal, based on the details that have been coming out, it sounds like they're going to basically do what they've done in the WNBA with the Commissioner's Cup, where, you know, it's not a separate entity. It's just like, we're going to label certain regular season games as in-season tournament games. And then they have, I guess, the round of eight. Sounds like it's still going to be all just in-season regular season games. And then they add one game for the final. So there will be two teams that have 83 games instead of 82. But it's not like they're adding, you know, 8 to 10 more regular season games. Because then I know there was a lot of like, all right, cool, introduce this, but cut the season to 58. They don't need to do that. And, you know, I don't know if we'll see what incentives they come up with to make players care about it, because that's going to be the first thing. You need player buy-in. And then once you get that, yeah, like I mean, for, especially for teams that haven't won anything meaningful in a long time, you're telling me like the Sacramento Kings wouldn't be excited about winning this in-season tournament. The New York Knicks wouldn't be excited about winning the in-season tournament. Like, you know, I don't know what they're talking about like $1 million per player, and that, especially for role players, that's a lot of money. Like, that should incentivize them to care. How you get fans to buy in, that's, you know, the bigger challenge, I think. But I don't want to poo-poo it before we actually see it in action, because I think a lot of people said that about the play-in tournament, and it turned out like that was pretty good so far.
When you look at, again, and you just mentioned this now, Brian, looking at the in-season tournament too, and you're saying, hey, yeah, the Knicks might like winning it, the Kings might like winning it, do you think it would matter to the stars? Like, looking at Steph Curry, looking at, you know, you look at Phoenix, a guy like Chris Paul, who's obviously up there in age, in the twilight of his career, would winning a tournament, does that do anything for the legacy of the stars? Or is it going to be something more for, hey, you know what, this is for shits and giggles. Let's try and, you know, add some excitement to game number 37 of the regular season for some random team. Do you think it's a bit gimmicky that the league is doing this?
It might be Chris Paul's best chance at winning a ring.
Do they get a ring for this? Wouldn't it just be
a trophy? I don't know. I'm
a participation ribbon? What are we giving away, Brian, yeah, right at this point?
I do think, I mean, especially again, from a role player perspective, like, for, yeah, Chris Paul or anyone earning $30 million, like, even if you win $1 million, who cares? Like, you're, it's a drop in the bucket for you. But like, you know, for the guys toward the end of your roster, so, you know, from a Sixers perspective, for Isaiah Joe or Shake Milton, like, that's half of their salary this year. That's a lot of money. So I think, you know, the stars on the team can almost like force themselves to care about it, knowing that they're probably going to need some of these role players to step up in the actual playoffs on their road to a hopeful championship. So this is their way of doing those role players a solid. And like, we're going to try to earn you guys some money, but you're going to have to pay it back by, you know, hitting some big shots in the playoffs.
Let's jump into some Sixers talk, because that's what the whole point of this podcast is, Brian, but I want to do that after a short break. All right, we're back, Brian. We talked a little bit just about some general NBA talk there earlier on. We'll jump into some Robert Sarver talk at the end of the podcast as well, but jumping into some Sixer-specific stuff. Montrezl Harrell ended up signing a two-year deal worth $5.2 million. It's the veterans minimum. Looking at bringing in a guy like that obviously now impacts the younger guys like Paul Reed, like Charles Bassey, presumably going to get moved down the rotation, knowing what we know about Doc Rivers and his affinity for sticking with veterans, which I think is going to be a huge, huge side note to this whole season, is what is Doc's coaching like? If this team struggles and comes out of the gate, you know, 11-8, 11-9, and we're at the 30 game mark and they're at 17-13, 16-14, I think the pressure on Doc is going to amplify times 1,000, and we're going to have to look at maybe seriously replacing him at that point. But that's a topic for probably not another day, Brian. That's a topic every day in Sixerland, is what happens with Doc Rivers. But looking at the Harrell signing, how do you think that impacts the Sixers rotation? And again, as I mentioned off the top, you're very good with the salary cap. You pretty much will know how it impacts pretty much every team inside out, especially the Sixers. When you look at their bottom line, are they going to be able to make any more moves during the regular season to potentially add more pieces, sans the buyout market?
They will. It gets a lot more complicated now. So right now they have 17 guys under contract. Two more than the regular season limit. So they're going to have to either trade two guys away, waive two guys, whatever the case, they need to get rid of two guys before the regular season starts. So you brought up Charles Bassey earlier. Like, I'm now nervous that Charles Bassey isn't even going to make the team, because he's only got $75,000 guaranteed on his contract until January 10th. And, you know, when you've got Embiid, Harrell, Reed, and then PJ Tucker, who I think part of the reason you sign him is because he can play some small ball five. It feels like bad asset allocation to have, you know, a third of your roster dedicated to guys who will either mostly play center or entirely play center in the case of Embiid, Montrez most likely, and then Bassey, I think, as well. So I'm keeping an eye on that. I think that's the big storyline, Sixers wise for the next month, is just how do they cut down on this roster logjam. Right now, they're about $765,000 away from the apron, which is the line they can't cross between now and June 30th. So they cannot sign anyone until they do start waiving some guys. You know, a lot of the guys who are in danger of being cut, Bassey, Isaiah Joe is fully non-guaranteed. Trevelyan Queen only has $300,000 guaranteed on his deal. Paul Reed, I think, should be safe, but worth noting at least that he is also fully unguaranteed until opening night. So, like, they will create more room under the apron by cutting these guys, probably at least $3 million, regardless of which two they get rid of. But it does limit their flexibility in terms of, you know, who they can trade for, because they just don't have a bunch of big contracts. And, you know, again, you can't cross that apron at any point. So, like, you can't trade Korkmaz and Thybul for a guy making, you know, $13 million, because that would probably push you over the apron. So I think it does suggest that they are going to they'll rectify this roster logjam however they will going into the season, but they're otherwise probably, like, I know a lot of Sixers fans want Thybul gone at the first possible minute. I have a feeling he's going to start the season in Philly, and we might just have to reevaluate closer to the trade deadline.
What's the impact, Brian, if they do end up crossing that apron? Like, what is the ultimate punishment from the NBA? Are they just like, hey, you can't take the court, you can't play a game? Do they have to give up draft picks? What would be the thing if they do end up crossing the apron? Let's just say, obviously, they're not going to, but I'm just saying hypothetically, right, if that happened, what would be the punishment there?
They literally can't. So whatever move, like, you know, you have to run every move by the league office. So if they, like, were trying to make a trade that would push them over the apron, the league office would say, no, this isn't legal. If they're trying to do a signing that would push them over, league office would say, nope, can't do it. So, like, they, when I say they can't do it, they really cannot under any circumstances cross that line.
Okay, I got you. And, you know, I was actually thinking one thing earlier when you were answering the question about Trevelyan Queen. I'd love to have $300,000 guaranteed, right? I mean, if that's yeah, totally cool. Yeah, that would be great.
That's not bad.
Yeah, that's a great thing for an NBA player. Even you looking at Charles Bassey, it's like, yeah, I hope he finds his footing somewhere. I look at Bassey as a project. I think he's 2 years away, three, you know, from even just being a rotation guy, but has the ups, has the athleticism. He's just a beast on the boards. You look at his body composition, he's just big dude who's able to, you know, agile, he can run like a gazelle. So I do hope he finds his footing somewhere, if that's not with the Sixers. Let's jump into some Robert Sarver talk. The Phoenix Suns owner ended up being suspended for one season. Baxter Holmes of ESPN has been all over this for quite some time. If you remember, this story did come out towards the end of last year, I believe, or beginning of this year, in terms of the first initial stages of, hey, that work situation in Phoenix and that organization, not exactly smooth. There's been some stuff in terms of him being misogynistic, making sexual advances and comments towards female employees, also making some racial remarks. When you look at what the league has decided to do here, a 1 year suspension, a $10 million fine for his behavior. Do you think the league sent him a message with this and sent a message to the rest of the NBA board of governors? Always weird to me, not saying owners anymore, but board of governors, in terms of, hey, we're not going to tolerate this kind of stuff happening inside our workspaces.
If anything, I feel like it sent the opposite message. Like, given the severity of the accusations, I don't think Robert Sarver should be in the NBA anymore. And, you know, I know a lot of people pointed this out, but the first page of the NBA's release when they announced the results of the investigation and his suspension, you know, they list among the key findings that he repeated the N-word, that he engaged in instances of inequitable conduct toward female employees, engaged in demeaning and harsh treatment of employees, but then said the investigation made no finding that his workplace misconduct was motivated by racial or gender-based animus, which to me is like, I guess they're saying he was just a dickhead to everyone. So, like, that it, I don't know. I just, it makes me cringe that this guy is still going to be involved in any in the NBA. And I think, you know, a lot of people have made this point that I'm sure if you go digging deep enough, a number of people on the NBA Board of Governors probably have similarly concerning skeletons in their closet. So they are not trying to, you know, force the issue here because they don't want the magnifying glass turned on them at some point. But it just, it feels very hypocritical relative to the response to Donald Sterling, where it's like, what is the difference? You just have one audio recording and that's the reason you can force him out, but you can't force Sarver out.
Yeah, I think that I do think that's the hard evidence, right? That separates those two cases, Brian. You look at it and with Sterling, yeah, you did have tape. You had him, you know, making these comments where Sarver, although he said he you know, is not happy with certain findings. I'm paraphrasing here that he wasn't totally thrilled with the punishment that the league gave him. And, you know, he's still angry from basically with the fact that he has to sit out or not really be there for a year and pay this fine. Although let's be real, they're going to find a way to get him involved in certain decision-making when it comes to the health of that franchise. But when you look at this, do you think this will give Sarver any incentive to possibly sell the team? Or is that like, nah, this guy's going to stick around. He's going to make sure that he's back next year. And again, say that he's made all the necessary changes and maybe pretend that he's made all those, although I'm not going to say that he won't. But do you think this will give him any sort of motive to move on from the NBA?
I would be surprised, especially in the context of the new TV deal coming up. And if, you know, possible expansion, like all of the owners or all the governors get a cut of those expansion fees. So if anything, I think, you know, maybe he's willing to move on in a couple of years, but right now there is a giant windfall awaiting in the next like 3 years in particular. I think no majority governor or ownership group is going to want to sell unless they're forced to.
Yeah, I agree with you. I do, but I do think that now that this is completely out, like I mentioned, Baxter Holmes had wrote about this way back in November now of last year, looking back at the dates when this initially came out. But you look at this and how the NBA can handle this, and maybe more people are going to come out and speak out on certain things, and maybe we're going to get some more information on this that might hurt Sarver's chances of actually returning. But again, the guy's going to sell his team for what, $2 billion? You know what I mean? So don't feel too sorry. Don't feel too sorry for Robert Sarver. We'll wrap up on this, Brian. Looking at the lay of the land in the NBA, we know what teams have made what moves. Obviously, I think Boston still remains the top seed in the Eastern Conference coming off that finals loss to Golden State, added Malcolm Brogdon. They sorely needed a point guard, got that now. Obviously, the hurts them, pardon me, that Danilo Gallinari not going to be available but with that ACL injury. But I love getting people's opinion on this. Haven't had you on the pod for a while now, but when you look at the Eastern Conference and you have your top five teams, and again, I think the East is completely loaded. I think if you look at last season's 10 teams that made the playoff slash play-in, I think you're going to have the exact same mix of those squads. Atlanta added DeJounte Murray, Cleveland obviously getting Donovan Mitchell, the Hornets with LaMelo Ball being a year or older, and I don't think the Knicks, Wizards, Pacers, Pistons, or Magic did enough to even climb into that conversation, although Washington with Bradley Beal likely going to be on the cusp of that, depending on what happens in Charlotte. But when you look at the top of the Eastern Conference, where do you have the Sixers amongst those squads? Because you got the Miamis, like I mentioned, the Bostons, the Milwaukees, Chicago should be decent again, but Brooklyn now with KD running it back with Kyrie Irving, and if they're healthy and no vaccine mandates, like where do you put the Sixers amongst the elites?
Yeah, Brooklyn's in its own tier because we just need to see it before we can believe them. Like we need to see that KD is not just moping his way through. We need to see what Ben Simmons looks like after a full year off. So like on paper, they have the talent to be one of the best, if not the best teams in the East. I'm not putting them in the top tier right now just because they are so hypothetical at the moment. I think Boston, Milwaukee, Philly are the top three in whichever order you want. I think a lot of people would have Philly third in that mix right now, which is fair because we haven't seen what James Harden looks like. I think that's one of the biggest questions for not only the regular season, but the playoffs is, you know, did this full off season off give Harden a chance to really recover from that hamstring injury? And if he looks like a totally different person, if he looks like his you know, not he's not going to score 35 points a game in Philly. They just don't need him to do that. But if he looks like that type of person, if he has his burst back in particular, that really raises the ceiling for the Sixers. So I think it's fair to have them third right now, but I think they had an unbelievably good offseason. You know, I know a lot of us at Liberty Ballers have been somewhat down on the Montrez signing, at least in terms of like what it means for their overall upside. I think it's a great regular season move, but as you mentioned earlier, like major questions about his usage, particularly in the playoffs with Doc. We've seen it happened before in the Denver series a couple of years ago with the Clippers. So like, I frankly think Doc and Harden are probably the two biggest questions for the Sixers heading into the year. And whereas, you know, Boston just made it to the finals last year, Milwaukee won the year before that. So I think they deserve a little bit more built in. Like, we know what we're getting out of these teams. The Sixers are a little bit more of a wild card. Let's see how these new pieces fit together, but on paper everything makes sense and they should be a much better team than they were last year.
Let's be honest, Brian, the number one question, the only question with the Sixers, even without James Harden, is Doc Rivers. What the hell is this guy going to do? And I think everybody kind of nervously waiting to see how he implements things, because I haven't seen Doc get testy as he did last year. Remember that going into the playoffs and people were questioning him giving up leads. Obviously, they were up 3-0 on the Raptors, and then the Toronto came back and won two in a row. So everybody was questioning him on that. So I think he is the huge question mark going into all of this. I think the Sixers have made great moves, right up there with the best off seasons of any team in the league. When you add PJ Tucker, you add DeAnthony Melton, you add Daniel House, hopefully getting a more in shape Harden, arrested Harden without the hamstring injuries, and now bringing in Montrezl Harrell, who again, if he doesn't work out, no harm, no foul, right, Brian? Is that really what is going to happen with Harrell? Like, if things don't go good, they can just kind of get rid of him for pennies on the dollar and not really have to deal with any long-term ramifications.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a player option next year, which I'm assuming he would turn down at least just to get a bigger contract. So I don't think it's going to have any long-term implications. It's just really his usage. And, you know, if Doc sticks by him, my concern with him, like, I think he's going to raise the regular season floor. I'm concerned that Doc is not going to experiment during the regular season, that he's just going to use Montrez. Okay, Montrez is our backup center. We're just going to stick with that regardless. Whereas like a team like the Sixers that is talented enough, you know, barring catastrophic injuries, should be in the top six in the East. Like, this is the time to figure out what you have in some of your other weird, funky lineup groups. Like, let's run out some three guard lineups with Melton, Maxey, and Harden. Let's trot out PJ at the five. Let's trot out Paul Reed at the five. Like, let's see what these guys have. So when we get to the playoffs and our plan A doesn't work, we have these other options in our back pocket. I'm worried that we're not going to see that. And Doc's just going to stick with Montrez regardless. Paul Reed's going to get buried. Like, you know, maybe we see a couple PJ at the five lineups, but not nearly as many as we should. And then we're going to get to the playoffs and things are going to go awry. And it's like, oh, well, we're going to just have to adjust on the fly because we didn't prepare during the regular season.
Yeah, we saw that with DeAndre, the corpse Jordan, right? Who parlayed his time with the Sixers into a new contract with the Nuggets. So good for Doc. He's at least getting his loyal soldiers paid. Brian, let's wrap things up here. Always enjoy having you on the podcast. Love reading your work, not only at Liberty Ballers, but at Forbes as well. And of course, hopefully get to do this throughout the regular season regularly as well.
For sure. Yeah. Thanks for having me on anytime, man.
All right. That's Brian Toporek. You can catch his work with us at Liberty Ballers. Also does some Sixers writing at Forbes as well. And you can catch him on Twitter at B Toporek. That's B-T-O-P-O-R-E-K. I'm at Jazz Kang 21. That'll do it for this episode of Sixers Daily. We got a new show launching on Thursday, just recording this on a Wednesday afternoon, but Josh Reynolds is going to be joining our podcast network. So he'll be having a new show coming up on Thursdays. Don't forget to check that out. And Sean and Dave will be back with the Talking About podcast on Friday. As I mentioned off the top, as I always do, subscribe to the Liberty Ballers podcast network. You can catch us wherever you get your fix. Always appreciate a 5-star review as well if you're inclined to give us one. And don't forget to check us out at libertyballers.com.